It's time for the Chuck and Buck Show.
What?
Oh, you guys are crewing up?
Let's do this. Yes.
Girls, what y'all trying to do? 24 karat magic in the air. Head to toe, so clear. Look out.
Hey, good morning and welcome in. It is Chuck-a-Buck in the Morning Sports Radio 950 KJR, 6 o'clock sharp here on a Wednesday. We do like our Wednesdays, and kind of Wednesdays during football season gives us, it's the only day during the week, it gives us a little bit of leniency to kind of go outside of the National Football League, because we pretty much get dominated by that on Monday recaps and Tuesday recaps and Thursday previews and Friday previews. So we've got a wide variety of things planned for you on today's program, including our Mama Said Mock You Out draft, getting bumped for a green jacket draft today, and much more, which I will outline for you coming up here in a matter of moments. But welcome in. My name is Chuck Powell. Bucky Jacobson is broadcasting by a river. And Chris Kidd is with us today in the Red Box producer booth. And boy, we're going to start with Kidd's play box, his sandbox today here, Bucky, because the NBA playoffs last night were wild. And boy, those damn Clippers. They're still just the Clippers. It doesn't matter how much talent you put on the floor, and it doesn't matter how much money you spend on it. They just can't get out of their own way. I'm watching Bengals highlights right now on my television here from the Carter Volkswagen living room, and I can't help but think about the Clippers when I watch the Bengals.
Yeah, I don't know. Chris would probably have to explain how the heck it can happen. You can go out and acquire the talent they did. I remember getting, I mean, just when they got Kawhi, thinking, oh boy, there they finally went over the hump. Apparently not. Can't close out a 3-1 series to the Denver Nuggets. So adios to the Clip Show.
Well, I think the explanation is pretty simple. It's the Denver Nuggets and the Miami Heat showed up, man. They are good teams. They're underrated teams. And I don't think I'm sitting here. I'm like, okay, I watched the playoffs to this point. I think the best teams have advanced. You know, I think Miami looked clearly better than Milwaukee. And I think that you know, the Denver Nuggets were a better team than the Los Angeles Clippers. Maybe not on paper, but the way they played from the beginning of the bubble to now, I think the better teams just flat out advanced. Chris, you agree or disagree?
Yeah, man. The Clippers were a huge letdown. They played like the better team. I'll say that. I really thought that the Clippers were going to win. I put $20 on it, and as you can imagine, I just lost dub. With that being said, the Denver Nuggets wanted it more. They were down 3-1 in two series, and they won both of them. And that's just credit to them not giving up. And you saw what Jokic has been able to do. Yeah, yeah. 20 rebounds last night. I mean, he's clearly been arguably the best center in this league. Giannis is gone. AD still left. Bam Adebayo is doing his thing in Miami. Yeah, I would say Jokic is right there. And just watching how they play, it's going to be fun to watch. I do think the Lakers have a huge advantage, but the good thing with the Nuggets, they have a lot of bodies. I mean, I think they're 9-10 deep. I mean, they have a lot of bodies they can throw at LeBron and AD. But ultimately, it's going to be a fun series. I think it'll go maybe 6 games at worst. But I think if the Lakers handle business, I wouldn't be shocked if the Lakers win 4-1 just because of the mission they're on. And they want to win the title so bad. And I just love the defense that they've been playing. So this series coming up is going to be really interesting to see how the Nuggets respond when they're down. But ultimately, just what happened with the Clippers last night was kind of a letdown. I mean, it was really disappointing. I hope Doc's not in jeopardy to lose his job, because he's a really fun coach and a great coach.
But I doubt it.
But ultimately, you know, the team didn't get it done. And he said that last night.
Superstars, that's what wins in the National Basketball Association, is when your superstars step up. This has just been the case my entire lifetime. I mean, there have been a couple of teams, including the Sonics when they won their title. That was a balanced team. The Detroit Pistons a few years ago, and the Chauncey Billups, Rasheed Wallace, you know, Rip Hamilton days, that was a team that won with complete balance on the court at all times. But for the most part, superstars, when they step up at postseason time, that's what advances in the NBA playoffs. I mean, you can see in Major League Baseball, the greatest superstar there is can't even get into the postseason in Mike Trout. And in the National Football League, I mean, it takes a village there as well. But in NBA terms, it's superstars. They're the guys that step up at the right time, and they advance you through the postseason. And Jamal Murray and Jokic have never been described really as superstars. Well, I know they haven't. Jokic maybe is an all-star, but they've played like superstars. I mean, they've been just about as – both of them have been just about as good as anybody in this NBA postseason. And so if they keep playing at that high of a level, you know, I give them a chance to advance. I'll go with Chris. I'll take the Lakers in this one. But I give them a chance because those two guys, Bucky, are playing like superstars.
Yeah, they are. Jamal Murray especially. I mean, young kid like he is, and he's going out there balling out. There's no fear. There is something to having that. I don't even know if it's a chip on a shoulder. When you're underestimated, when nobody else picks you, including us, for crying out loud. I mean, I'm sitting here kicking myself right now that in our little thing, nobody took Jokic. I mean, I'm sitting here thinking to myself, I could maybe still be in this thing. No, I'm not. But no, I think that there's a huge part to that mentality that comes along with everybody thinks you're out of, everybody thinks that you're done, you know, you're just kind of, you're just there for the slaughter. And these guys don't think that in that locker room anyway. They do not think that they're out of it against anybody. Even yesterday in their post game interviews, they're like, yeah, we got to go against LA. They're a good team, but we believe in each other. And that's something that carries you a long ways, whether it's the NBA or any sport for that matter. If everybody else counts you out, but inside your locker room, you don't. Some amazing things can happen.
Well, look, I mean, I get it. I get the chip on the shoulder. I actually did like the Nuggets in this postseason. I got the notes to prove it from our mock draft. But the Western Conference is so balanced that, you know, in our little thing that we do, our little draft, you know, it was like soon as Chris picked Donovan Mitchell, I'm like, he's right. The Jazz could knock the Nuggets out. And they almost did. I mean, the Nuggets have had to come back from 3-1 deficits twice in this postseason to this point. And so it was just that fear that, all right, I like the Nuggets, but we can't ignore the fact that this entire conference is loaded. And if you take Denver, if you take a Denver player, he could end up going home after the first round, and they very nearly did. But it's turned out to be an exceptional ride for the Denver Nuggets. Yeah, I'm taking the Lakers, but I don't count them out, that's for sure. Let me just ask this. I'll throw this out to both of you. Best defensive play in postseason history? Bam Adebayo, that's what Magic Johnson said last night. That's what Scott Van Pelt called it, the biggest defensive play maybe he's ever seen last night. Is that about as good as it gets, considering the stage and how good that play was on the dunk attempt by Tatum to win game one for the Heat?
Thing was almost in, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, the ball was literally over the rim, and he's like, No. I mean, the only thing that we was missing was the Dikembe finger wave. Other than that, that was unbelievable block.
Chris, what do you think, man?
It's up there. LeBron's block to me is still ahead of that one, just because of the magnitude.
That was
game one of the Eastern Conference Finals. That was game seven of the NBA Finals. And no team at that point had scored for the last 3 minutes, and then Kyrie Irving comes out, hits the big shot. That was huge. If LeBron doesn't block that shot, they probably don't win that series.
Yeah, I think that wins in terms of magnitude, but I mean, this is the Eastern Conference Finals. I mean, it's in the bubble, but this is still, you know, this is the second biggest stage, right, in the National Basketball Association. And the difficulty of the defensive play, as Bucky pointed out, to basically have your wrist cocked back on a dunk attempt from a really good basketball player in Jason Tatum, and then to still reject it. The level of difficulty on that thing sends it through the roof. But excellent stuff, excellent action last night from the National Basketball Association, and we'll talk more about it coming up a little bit later on in the show. But let's find out what else is on tap for today's program.
know what's brewing. This is What's on Tap.
Everybody's going to think I'm insane, but I know I'm right.
I'm kind of excited to hear it, and I'm kind of scared.
Poured by Pelican Brewing Company. Born at the beach.
Manny, look at this. Pelican, play. Come on, Pelican.
Seattle Sports Radio 950, KJR.
National Football League, it's still the star this time of year, and so we will spend most of our show talking NFL today, and it's hump day, which around these here parts, that means we officially, on Chuck and Buck in the Morning, start previewing the next opponent. Now, we've already let a couple things leak out. I mean, we spent a little bit of time Monday with you and with Coach, and then a little time yesterday with Greg Bell talking about the Patriots because it's such a big game and such an interesting matchup. But nonetheless, officially, that preview talk begins today here on Hump Day. So Greg Bell will join us at 7 o'clock this morning to get you ready for Sunday night's big tilt against Bill Belichick and Cam Newton, not Tom Brady. Cam Newton and the New England Patriots. Also today, Will Brinson will join us at 8:25, our NFL insider from CBS Sports. So he'll be with us for an overview of the entire National Football League's opening week. We've got Waiver Wire Wednesday, so we'll satisfy your fantasy palate as well. Slick Hawk will be coming in special for that at 8:45 today. We'll also lean on Slick Hawk. We'll just roll that over into the 9 o'clock hour with him. As we have a U.S. Open preview, so a little bit of golf today. We got our green jacket draft. That's how we preview major events. So we'll do that today at 9 o'clock. So a lot planned on the football front and also on the golf front today. College football, if you missed it, Rick Neuheisel will replay today at 9:30. Otherwise, you can hear the entire interview at sportsradiokjr.com. It's up. It's kind of important to replay this today because we just got breaking news, apparently, this according to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, that the Big Ten has decided to play this fall and wants to start in October. Now, that's major news, and obviously the Pac-12 has to be monitoring and assessing what the Big Ten is doing. I think these two conferences need to be in step. So maybe Pac-12 football will return in October as well. By the way, I don't know if anybody has noticed this, but we are in September. It's September 16th today. That means October, Bucky, is in 16 days. So that means very soon they will be playing college football. So we'll talk more about that coming up on the show as well. Major League Baseball, the Mariners series got moved. So, yes, I don't know if they were listening to us yesterday or what, but they decided that, we probably shouldn't have played in that smoke. Not two games on Monday. So they decided not to play last night. The series gets moved to San Francisco, which is also being affected by the fires. And so that tells you how bad things here are here air quality wise in Seattle. If you're going to move to Northern California, where it's safer to play these games. But that's what's going to happen. So the Mariners are going to play tonight and they will play tomorrow as well. And their home season is completely over now. It's done. So what a weird year it's been in 2020 and the Mariners season just a part of that weirdness that we have experienced. Speaking of Major League Baseball, there have been some big decisions that have been made here in the last 24 hours, and there have been even bigger things suggested that could be made, decisions that could be made here in the very near future. And so when we come back on the program, we're going to play a little take it or leave it. Major League Baseball's new rules. Are they here to stay? Sports Radio 950 KJR. Get to delve into breaking news stories here on the morning show. It's just we just get up ridiculously early, just like way too early for normal human beings. And yet we have a breaking news story to share with you, and so we will delay a little bit the conversation I had planned with Bucky about Major League Baseball to emphasize that breaking news story from the last segment, and that is that the Big Ten has apparently voted unanimously to go ahead and play fall football, according to Dennis Dodd from CBS Sports, and he seems to be somebody that's got his ear to the ground on all of this stuff. He is confirming that the Big Ten could start as early as Friday, October 23rd. And not just could, that's where it sounds like they're targeting. Rapid testing will be cited as changed conditions to why they will make this, adjustment to the schedule, as they were planning, obviously, to go spring at one point like the Pac-12. But they have decided that they've made enough progress with their rapid testing measures that they can go ahead and proceed this fall. They would play 8 games in 8 weeks. And again, Dennis Dodd saying that it was a unanimous vote to make this change and make this decision. And Bucky, you know what? As somebody that thought it was a good idea to not start when we were originally scheduled to start Pac-12 football, Big Ten football, I would say it for the entire country, I still am going to applaud this. I mean, my take the entire time was, if you're not ready, let's not risk the health of the players, especially when you're going with a truncated schedule anyway. I have just felt from the beginning, and we've had several reckless at breakfast in which we've discussed this, that just delaying it gives you a chance to jump back in whenever you want, whether that's late fall football or winter football or early spring football or whatever the case may be. Let's go ahead and be prepared and feel confident about our testing and feel confident about how safe of an environment we can create for the college football player before we proceed. And if you feel confident earlier than later, fine, then let's do it. But one thing about this, Bucky, is, you know, I kind of feel like the Pac-12 has to be in lockstep with the Big Ten. If the Big Ten's starting October 23rd, then it's not going to surprise me one lick that the Pac-12 wouldn't piggyback off of this decision and also start around the exact same time.
Well, I hope they do. I mean, I hope that they're not the only ones left out in the cold. And so as fans of the Pac-12, we're kind of left out in the cold. And I mean, I assume that they were planning. They had some sort of plan. We haven't heard anything or seen any plan of what they were trying to do, other than the Pac-12 also was saying that they had this rapid testing kind of now developed and that they had their hands on it. And they were going to be able to figure out a way to get this thing back sooner than later. It's good news, in my opinion, that the Big Ten is doing this. It was voted unanimously, I guess, that, yep, we're ready to go. We're ready to do this. And that's where I've been the whole time, was we got to figure out a way to kind of live amongst this COVID-19 time and figure out how to do it in as safe a possible way, not just for, you know, the professional athletes, but especially for the amateur athletes as well. So to me, if they figured out a way to get this testing down to where you can test, you know, daily and you get rapid response and you can test the day of the game, test all these guys, now all of a sudden you're going to feel good about putting uninfected players out there banging into each other, and that was the whole key. So I'm glad that they figured out a way to get this thing rocking and rolling, because I want to see more football. Everything is weird this year. Nothing is going to be ideal, but if they can figure out a way to do it safely, then let's do it. And I hope the Pac-12 follows suit.
Yeah, well, I mean, I want them, though, to stick with their guns in that we're going to make it safe. I said this at the time. I still believe it now. I think that the fact that the Big Ten and the Pac-12 players and their We Are United program that they sprung on both conferences opened both conferences, both opened all conferences up to litigation. If they weren't made safe, and I think that they forced the Big Ten and the Pac-12 to analyze, okay, do we have the best system here? Are we ready to satisfy this? Maybe they're right. Maybe we don't have this on lockdown. Maybe we need some more time to figure this out. And so, as I've said many times, I hope they're working on this on a daily basis. While they're not playing football, I hope they're working on how they can make it safer for the players. I hope that's something that is on the front burner for every athletic director in the Pac-12 and certainly for the commissioner. So I don't want them to react to this by just saying, well, they're playing October 23rd. We're not ready, but we better play October 23rd. Because there's still this element, Bucky, where, I mean, gosh, Ed Orgeron just yesterday, defending champion LSU Fighting Tigers, and he announces, I'm pretty sure most of our guys have it. I mean, how? I mean, good night, nurse. And we're still going through with this? They're not any safer. That we've got the most prominent program in the country right now saying most of our players had it or do have it. I mean, you obviously didn't have a great system set up. Hopefully the Pac-12 and the Big Ten have taken this time, this extra time, where they didn't rush this thing, and they've done the right things to create the measures necessary for creating a safe environment so we don't have the same issues that Virginia Tech's having, that LSU's having, that Texas Tech's having, and that many others who decided to rush and put football first are having right now. So I hope it's been enough time. I think that maybe it could be enough time, but the Pac-12's probably going to react to the Big Ten and start playing football around the exact same time. I hope that they're ready to do it. I hope they're safer today, Bucky, than they were when they decided to postpone the season until further notice a couple of months ago.
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously, I want the safety part of it, but I don't. I mean, I suppose to me, my whole thought on it is if you can keep it to where the spread is not to the overwhelming extent. I mean, if somebody gets it and then you all of a sudden you don't know for 2 weeks, that's a whole different ball game than somebody getting it and then you know the next day or later on that same day. To me, that's the whole. I don't know for sure if there's a way of keeping it out of everything. I know for a fact there isn't a way of keeping it out of everything. So to me, it's a matter of whether or not you feel, if you individually as a player don't feel that there is a safe way of doing it, period, and you don't want to risk the unknown of what the long-term parts of this whole thing are, if you don't want to risk that, then you still have the opportunity to say, no, I'm not, it's not worth it to me. If you're on the other side of the envelope where you kind of feel, you know what, yeah, this is something that I may get it. I may or may not. I don't want to be unknowingly spreading it to, you know, tens or dozens or hundreds of people or beyond. Then all of a sudden, that's when the testing part of it comes in. So it sounds like the Big Ten has figured out a way that they feel ultra confident in doing this, because nobody wants to open themselves up to the litigation that could come if you all of a sudden have, God forbid, you know, one of your athletes fall deathly ill. So I think that they obviously have that in the forefront of their mind. It's just a matter of, is there a way we can get this thing done and not look like we're just doing it simply be out of greed, but that we want the money that we're going to be losing if we don't play, and we think that we can do it in a safe way. I think that they've probably have figured that out. To me, if it boils down to the testing part of it, and then understanding that there is no real safe way to kind of walk around, you know, the planet right now. I mean, there's no, if you want to stay ultra safe from this thing, you got to stay locked in your house. And if you don't stay locked in your house, then you are opening yourselves up to the possibility of contracting it. So I think they figured it out, and I hope that the Pac-12 follows suit. I mean, of course, I don't want them to just jump to some conclusion, but I think that they obviously have been working. We've seen the reports that they've been working on getting this rapid testing, rapid response testing. If you've gotten that, and then now you have enough of the players that feel like, okay, that is safe enough for me. I feel content with having that at my disposal. Then I think that there is a way that they should do it, and I think that I think they will. I hope they will. Jeez.
Well, that's an interesting, by the way, point that you brought up in there. Is look, I think all of the people that are angry about this are simply angry that their spoiled lives, they've not been able to watch football when they want to watch football. I mean, I really think that that's what it boils down to. I mean, there are people out there that want to play football when they want to play football. There are people out there that want to watch football when they want to watch football, when they're accustomed to watching football. I think that's where most of the anger comes from with this issue. But there are so many people that have felt all along that players, well, they're leaving because they're not allowed to play football. They're going straight to the pros. You just stumbled upon something. I don't know if you did it intentionally, accidentally, or what. Look, there have been a lot of guys from the SEC and the ACC that have decided, and they went ahead and played. They've decided, no, I'm going to the pros. I mean, maybe there are more players that will say, I'm not going to open myself up to this. I'll just go straight to the draft. I hung around maybe because in the spring this thing will be safer and maybe we'll be out of it. But if you're going to go ahead and play on October, maybe I end up jumping to the pros. Maybe this ends up costing you more players than waiting was going to cost you. I don't think that's out of the question.
Well, I don't think it's out of the question. I think that's a really small select group of guys that just kind of felt that their draft status was cemented, at least from the standpoint of I'm going to be drafted high enough to where I know I'm going to get an opportunity in the NFL. And that's a really, I mean, the guys that get drafted, period, is a small percentage of all the guys that are out there playing. And the majority of the guys that are out there playing still feel like they need to pad their resume. They need to go out there and show what they can do to get into the NFL. And then even getting into the NFL doesn't guarantee you're going to ever set foot in a regular season game and be able to kind of create some career out of it. So I mean, sure, is there some? I mean, I on the
no,
flip
I'm
side
talking
of that,
specifically though about those guys. I'm talking about those
right.
guys that that are thinking about an NFL future that have already made the decision.
Right. Well, I wouldn't be surprised if there's some that do it. I think that a lot of those guys, the same ones, it's like the Penny Sewell from Oregon, who's going to be a top first round guy. I think that he kind of was under the impression of, if we were to play this regular season, he was planning on playing. And then to him, playing in the spring, all that does potentially is open up the opportunity of having some little injury. If you have a big injury that costs you a year, it kind of screws you draft-wise, period. If you have a little injury that's still nagging when it comes time for draft, now all of a sudden you've done nothing but hurt your prospects of where you're going to be drafted. So, I mean, I think you got to play it two different ways. The sooner they play, I think that you might have more of those guys that maybe are thinking they're in that group of, you know, first or second round guys, let's just say, and they're thinking, if I go out here and play and show out, I might be able to up my stock. And then there's other guys that are like, I'm already right at the top of the, you know, first round. Why would I go out and risk it? You might lose some of those guys. I'm with you on that. You might lose some of that top first round talent guys that are like, I don't want to risk it.
Oh, I think you're going to lose some either way. I think I'm just saying that everybody was kind of chalking this thing up to, see, we're not playing, and we're going to lose all of our players to the pros. Well, there have been a lot of players that have decided we're going to skip this entire season whose teams are playing actively right now. And so who knows what kind of effect this will have. Maybe this will have more of an effect by playing now, losing players who are like, I'm not going to risk that. I mean, I'm not saying that they're making a bad decision here in the Pac-12, but I'm not going to put myself at increased exposure just to play 8 games in a regular season. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to tap out right now and get ready for the NFL draft. I'm not sure how that's going to play out. It's not going to be a monster number either way. But I'm just reacting to those who feared that everybody was going to leave if you didn't play football this fall. You might actually have more of these NFL prospects that leave because you are playing football this fall. I mean, there's a chance of that. Yeah. I mean, LSU, Ed Orgeron, again, I'll reference him. He lost like 3 guys after they decided to play. I mean, 3 right. of his best players, Jamar Chase and a couple of linemen, Shelvin and a couple of other guys, they decided, once they decided we're going to play fall, then they decided I'm going to go to the NFL. So who knows what kind of effect it'll have? Who knows how this is going to affect individual decisions made by players going forward? I was going to do baseball. We're not going to have time to do that here, Bucky. So I'll just close with one final comment on this particular topic. Does it not point out the absurdity of bowl season, by the way, that we can wait until October 23rd to start a season and still get it in before the end of the new year? And I realize they're playing 8 instead of 12, but that entire time, that 6 weeks of getting bowl season in, and you know, and some teams wait 6 weeks before they actually play another game. I mean, think about that cushion that provided the Pac-12 and the Big Ten. I mean, they can wait till October 23rd, still fit in a season, and have it wrapped up before Christmas, for goodness sake. I mean, 2 right. games in October, 4 in November, 2 games in December, and you're done, and you're done by Christmas, and you haven't put any ripple effect going beyond 2020 because there's already a built-in absurd cushion of time that takes place between the end of the regular season and the truly meaningful postseason games.
Yeah, that's true. I've never really understood why they have so much time in between the bowl games, other than the fact that they're just wanting to get every single eyeball they possibly can on every single one of these silly little bowls. And then they just basically, okay, well, we'll just push the other ones even later and later because the diehard college football fans are going to stick around. They're obviously going to watch as many of them as they possibly can. I like the fact that it's working out in that way. If we can get these other two conferences on board, if all of a sudden now with even a truncated season and some weird way of figuring out who's who and who's the best, if we still can have somewhat of a playoff and still have, not necessarily the bowl season, but the playoff part of the bowl season, if that can still look somewhat normal like it used to, then sign me up for it. So I guess it would be kind of a weird backwards way of this whole thing kind of turning out to work out in the long run. But yeah, the whole bowl season is kind of a joke in my opinion, but I know that and mostly from listening to you.
yeah, well, don't do that. Don't make a habit of that. Again, the story breaking today, the Big Ten looks like it has unanimously decided that they are going to start their season in the fall on October 23rd, according to Dennis Dodd. They're going to play 8 games throughout the fall, and so they will get their season in, as long as everything cooperates with that, before the end of 2020, this wonderful 2020 year. They'll get it all in 2020, and my assumption, I think Bucky's assumption as well, is that the Pac-12 will probably follow suit. So we'll see how they respond to the Big Ten's decision today. If we find out anything, of course, we will pass that along. All right, coming up next, the Seahawks, as we reach hump day, we're getting ready to preview the next opponent. We've already teased it a little bit. We've had it leak out because it's such a fascinating matchup against Bill Belichick and his new quarterback. So we'll talk about Cam Newton, the running back, next on Sports Radio 950 KG.
Now.
Chuck Powell, Bucky Jacobson with you here on this Wednesday. Chuck and Buck in the morning, Sports Radio 950 KJR. Greg Bell is coming your way in 13 minutes, so we talk to our our Seahawks insider, get his thoughts as we begin hump day preview of the New England Patriots versus the Seattle Seahawks this Sunday night in front of Al and Chris and the gang. So that comes your way at 7 today. And don't forget Fact or Fiction today at 7:35, a chance for you to win $1,000 in cash this week, maybe $10,000 if you are the best, and we only want the best. We really do. Participating for the $10,000 prize, all thanks to Emerald Queen Casino. So be listening for today's Fact or Fiction pick at 7:35. But speaking of those Patriots, something stood out to me and many people, not just me, over the weekend, and that is that Cam Newton had 19 passes and 15 runs in his first game as the New England Patriot quarterback. There were a lot of people that thought that maybe Josh McDaniels would have fun with this 7'6", 350-pound quarterback, maybe running the football for him for this upcoming year. But, man, they used him like a damn running back in their first game on Sunday. I asked Coach Holmgren over the week on Monday when he joined us if he had ever considered doing that with Brett Favre, just giving him 15 carries and turning him into a running back. Here's what he had to say.
You got to have the guy who can do it, and I think college football has changed, and we've seen it. And so you can draft these young quarterbacks who have that ability, you know. And Russell Wilson is that guy. The thing is, I still contend. I get nervous when you see the guys running around. One good hit, and boom, they could get hurt. Then who's your backup, and how are you going to do that? But you know, Bill Belichick he's a smart guy, and he's really a good coach, and so they're going to get the most out of their people. But I don't know a lot of the names on their team. I know Cam Newton, but they even made that comment this morning, I think. They have guys that are, I don't know. So it'll be an interesting setup, I think.
Yeah. Bucky, I mean, I don't know. I don't. I would imagine that's the game plan. You know, we had a lot of discussion yesterday about maybe this is the new Seahawks offense that's two passes to every run. Maybe that was just based off of the matchup
that Pete Carroll had at his fingertips. So I guess we could say the same thing about the Patriots. Maybe that's their new offense, that Cam Newton carries the ball 10 to 15 times a game. Maybe it was the matchup. I guess after just one game into a 16-game season, we don't know everything. But nevertheless, you got to defend against Cam Newton and the run because Bill Belichick is going to use and abuse this dude.
Yeah, well, there's I have to think that as a head football coach, when you start seeing, you know, the Russell Wilsons and guys like that running around when you're Bill Belichick, there's a part of you that's like, oh, I wish I had a guy that could do that. Now, I don't think he was losing a whole lot of sleep over it because he had Tom Brady, who is the best to ever play the position, probably. And so it wasn't like he was losing out at that position by any stretch of the imagination. But I think it would be a nice, fun aspect. A toy that could do that is something that he probably has had a whole bunch of stuff up his sleeve for the last 20 years that he would have done. That so I think that wrinkle, I don't think that wrinkle's going anywhere by any stretch of the imagination, but I know for a fact that there's definitely got to be some part of him that understands he can do certain things against the Dolphins, and he's probably not going to be able to do all those same things against the Seahawks. I mean, the Seahawks have a few extra guys, the Jamal Adams that we just saw play yesterday. If you have that guy that has an eye on him 100% of the time, I'm not saying necessarily spy him, but he just has an eye on him. Cam Newton's not going to want to be running around a whole heck of a lot of 33s come headhunting for him. So, and I shouldn't say headhunting, but you know what I mean. If he's just coming to kind of lay some wood, I think that he's going to implement Cam Newton. I think that it's this one-year deal. It's kind of a, hey, Cam, go show everybody what you got. And so I'm going to use you the way that I think that I want to use you. And, you know, hopefully you can stay healthy throughout the process. But he's gonna make adjustments. That's one thing that Belichick does probably better than any coach out there, is he makes adjustments based on personnel and based on the actual matchups. So you're going to see Cam Newton running around a little bit this next week because he is exceptional at it. He always has been. When he's healthy, he's a tough guy to bring down. But I wouldn't be too terribly surprised if we don't see him necessarily toting the rock more as a runner than he is just trying to pass the ball this next week.
Well, at 7:45, I'm going to tackle this topic in Reckless at Breakfast. So maybe this is an absolute philosophical change that's taking place in the National Football League. We'll discuss it then. Coming up next, though, Greg Bell joins us, our Seahawks insider. He'll give us every latest update on your Seattle Seahawks on Sports Radio 950 KJ.